It is truly a joy to be back at St. Michael's today. As you know, I don't live very far from here. In fact, I walked down this morning, and so I pass by this church all the time. And every time I do, I think about Kate and Julie and Frank and Chris Ishibashi and Arlene Ballard and Peter Ennis and all the people in this church that I know and love. And I walk by this church and my heart is warmed to think about all of you and about the vigorous Christian life that takes place in this congregation.
It's a joy to be back with you now. I would have been back earlier, but we had COVID. So everything in our lives got put on hold for a while. But here I am and glad to be here. I'm very sorry that my wife, Margaret, is not with me. She usually travels with me on Sundays, but there was a retreat this weekend for spouses of priests and deacons in the diocese and bishops, and that's returning home this morning. So she's in the middle of finishing up that retreat, but sends her best wishes to all of you. Let me give you another little announcement from the diocese this morning as well. So the priests of this parish and I just returned from our annual priest conference earlier this week, and Bishop Alan Shin was not with us, and I announced on the first night that the reason Alan wasn't with us is that he was in Seattle moving his mother into hospice care, and asked the prayers of the assembled priests and the diocese for his mother, Chu Young, and for Alan and his family as they went through that complicated sorting out that comes in the final chapter of a person's life. Just this morning, as I was preparing to process into the church, I got a text message from Alan saying that his mother died this morning, and I responded very briefly with condolences. I'll communicate a longer message later. But I want to share that with you and ask you all to keep Chu Young in your prayers for the repose of her soul, and Alan and his siblings and his father as they go through the, again, complicated things that we must do when someone that we love passes. So keep Alan in your prayers and all of his family. I had a chance to meet before the service with those who are going to be presented for confirmation and for those who are renewing their baptismal vows. We also have one who's being baptized this morning, and so there's a lot of things happening here today, and they are all joyful. And a wonderful time with the candidates, and they're a good group of people. This church should be proud of them, who raised them up and prepared them to receive the sacrament. We talked for a while about what the sacrament means and what it means for the church and what it means for each of us in our own lives. So, we are on the third Sunday of Easter. And the first Sundays after Easter are always accounts of the resurrection appearances of Jesus Christ. Last week, we read about Jesus' appearance to the disciples on Easter night, the evening of Easter day, when Jesus appeared to his disciples and said, "Peace be with you," and breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit," and then showed them his hands and his side, and Thomas wasn't there, so Thomas didn't believe it. And a week later, Jesus came back. Thomas was immediately converted and became the first person to declare the lordship and kingship of Jesus Christ. So that's always the first Sunday after Easter. And then as we continue through the season, we have the other appearances of Jesus. Now, the story that we have today is the story of Jesus appearing on the beach with the disciples after a night of fishing that didn't go very well, Jesus' instructions to them, then their great and miraculous catch of fish, and then breakfast, and then Jesus' encounter or exchange with Peter. We're told that the disciples were together, and Peter said, "I'm going fishing." You know how that seems so natural to me? It's I mean, it may not seem, it may seem counterintuitive. They've just been through crucifixion and everything else. Now I'm going fishing, but you know how it is, and Alan and his family will live through this in the next weeks. When someone dies and a family goes through that grief, and then there's the day when you try to return to normalcy and do the things that you always do. And I think that's what we're seeing with Peter and the other six disciples who went with them. The great events of Holy Week and Easter are over. And Peter says, I'm going fishing. And the others say, we'll go with you. And they go out in the boat, and they spend the night in the boat, and they fish all night long, apparently throwing their nets to the port side of the boat. And all night long, they didn't catch a fish. And in the morning, they saw somebody on the shore. They didn't immediately know who it was. And that person said, cast your nets to starboard and see what happens. And they threw their nets off to the right side of the boat. And this time the nets were so full that it strained the nets. And they pulled it in, this great catch of fish. And when that happened, that miraculous thing, John, the disciple John, recognized and said, it is the Lord. And Peter, who, you know, I've gone fishing and I've never been naked. But Peter was. And so also, it seems to me that if you're going swimming, you take off your clothes, not put them on. But Jesus, I mean, Peter put on his outer garments and then flung himself into the water and swam to shore. And the others came along dragging the nets behind. They met Jesus on the shore, and Jesus had a charcoal fire going, said, give me some of the fish, and roasted it, and they ate a little breakfast. The thing about the resurrection appearances of Jesus, especially as they are recorded by the evangelist John, is that they always contain within them this thing, which is Jesus is not immediately recognized. We think about Mary Magdalene on Easter morning going to the tomb, and Jesus came to her and spoke to her, and she didn't recognize this person who was most intimately connected to her in her life of everyone that there was. She didn't recognize him, and eventually he said, Mary. And when he spoke her name, her eyes were opened, and she recognized him as Jesus, as the Christ, as Lord and Messiah. In this story, all of the disciples saw Jesus on the shore, and they did not recognize him until they had the miracle of the fish. And Jesus gave them the gift of this great catch of fish, and then their eyes were opened, and they recognized that it was the Lord. Now, I want to say just something about resurrection appearances. So, my mother died 10 years ago, and I don't think about her every day, but I think about her often enough. And I miss her, and I would love to see my mother again. But here's what I don't mean by that. That I would be at home in the evening in my living room behind locked doors, and she would suddenly appear in the room and eat a piece of broiled fish and then disappear again. What I want is to have her spaghetti again. And that's not going to happen. So when we read about the resurrection appearances, we need to project ourselves into the place of the disciples and read the words that we find on the page and seek to understand them and recognize that these appearances of Jesus were terrifying. It isn't what they wanted. They see, they believe, although often enough the scriptures say, though some doubted. They're glad to see Jesus, but they don't understand these appearances. And the appearances are not actually comforting. Jesus appeared, he cooked fish, he gave it to them with the bread, they ate it. Now, if we want to see what's going on in this story, we should recognize that although the elements of the story are all different than what happened on the night before Jesus died, on the night of his arrest, this is Eucharistic. Jesus has taken bread, and he has taken fish. He has broken it. He has given the pieces to the disciples. They have eaten. And it is a Eucharistic experience of communion with God through Jesus. So it's very theologically significant. It is personally and humanly troubling, but it is of profound importance in our understanding of the resurrection and of the risen Christ. It was time for the disciples to be recommissioned. Each of them and all of them had, in the course of their living, connected themselves and sworn themselves to Jesus of Nazareth. They had followed him over 3 years. They had seen works of wonder and heard the words of the kingdom of heaven. They had followed him on roads that were dark and hard, and they followed him into the mowing mouth of death in Jerusalem. They had done everything they could to prove their loyalty and devotion to Jesus. But Jesus died, and he has been raised. And it's time for a new chapter in the Christian enterprise. And the disciples need to be recommissioned for the work that will befall them now, that lies before them, and the roads on which they will walk, and especially for the conviction that will carry them to their own ends. You have some beautiful windows in this church. I've seen them many times, but I haven't studied them. But often when we see images of the disciples or the apostles, they frequently are holding the instrument of their death. All of them but John were martyred for the faith. And that martyrdom for Peter is prefigured in the story we've heard today. The road for which they have been born lies before them now. It will be a very hard road, and it will have the most extreme of ends for each of them. Now, to make the movement from discipleship, which is following, to apostleship, which is being sent out, they go into this transition, and the transition requires something new of them, new vows and new promises, and they must be recommissioned for the work ahead of them. That happens, I believe, in Jesus giving them the miraculous catch of fish, in a way recapitulating the words he said to the disciples at the start, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of people." And that now is revealed in a new and miraculous, a wondrous way at the end. And then he broke bread with them and shared Eucharist, and they had the opportunity to revisit their experiences on the night of the Last Supper and to understand again Christ's body broken, blessed, and offered to them. But there was one of them who was sort of a special case. Peter had been the first in the years of the disciples' travels with Jesus to declare him Messiah and Lord. And when he did, Jesus turned to him and said, "You are no longer to be called Simon, the name given to you at birth. Now I give you a new name, Petrus," meaning rock, and laid his hands upon Peter and said, "On this rock I will build my church." That was Peter's first commissioning for the special role that he would carry in the life of the church in that first generation of Christians. The problem is that on the night of Jesus' arrest, Peter denied Jesus 3 times in the courtyard of the high priest. And there must be a way back from that. So Jesus took Peter aside and said, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter said, "Of course I love you." And Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter said, "Of course I love you." And Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter burst into tears and said, "Yes, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And in this threefold promise of devotion and loyalty, Peter has undone the weakness and the betrayal that happened on the night of Jesus' arrest. This was Peter's special recommissioning. And I hear in Jesus' conversation with Peter something that I think is going to be replicated in this church today for these confirmands. And that is Jesus speaking to one who at one time had made life promises to Jesus. And now Jesus is really asking, Peter, do you still mean it? Now from here, Peter will go forward, a man brave and strong and faithful. And that end to which Jesus referred will be Peter crucified upside down in Rome on a wooden cross. And Peter will be faithful to the end. But this is the moment of Peter's recommitment, and it's the point of Peter's recommissioning at the hands of Jesus to be again the rock on which Jesus will found the church. Now, this morning, we're going to baptize a little girl. And promises we made on her behalf that she cannot understand, the promises we made by her parents and godparents, by her family and her community, promises to renounce evil, the prayer book says Satan, the evil in this world, the evil that besets us from without, that rises up from within, to renounce that evil and to say that evil will not have power over me, I will not be a part of it. In a world so broken, I will not be a part of the destruction. Instead, I will turn to Jesus Christ and accept him as my Savior and put my whole trust in his grace and love. That's the vows and promises that we're making today on behalf of this little girl. All right, I'm going to ask you a question. I asked the confirmands, so I'm going to ask you too. Just put your hand up. How many people here remember their baptism? A couple of you, a few of you. Most of us were baptized as infants. I was 6 months old. I don't remember it. But if we were baptized as infants, we were not expected to take responsibility for our baptized lives. We were not expected to take responsibility for our vows and promises, but they were made. And through our childhood and our raising, our parents and godparents kept their promises to raise us up in the Christian faith and life. And then one day, to bring them to their bishop. And that's today. And the only questions that I'm going to ask the confirmands in the service today are, do you reaffirm your renunciation of evil? Do you, I can't remember the exact words, recommit to your devotion to Jesus Christ, something along those lines? Those are the only questions. And when I ask those questions, it seems to me that what we as a church are asking the candidates for confirmation is this. Are you still in? These promises were made on your behalf when you were a baby. Now you are old enough to take responsibility for them and for what they mean. For the glories and the wonders of the Christian life, but also for the costs of the Christian life. You are old enough now to take responsibility for it. Do you still mean it? The same test that Jesus gave to Peter, the same question, coming after an up and down life, because it's, you know, it's Peter, an up and down life of loyalty and falling away, of love and indifference. Jesus asks Peter the question, are you still in? Do you still mean it? And today we will ask that of the confirmands. And this will be their recommissioning of their baptized lives. So what we do here today is incredibly important. I have said to the confirmands that in my opinion, in a world as broken as this one is, there is a responsibility that comes to everyone, religious or not religious, Christian or not, that at some point in their life they must come in front of their community and declare themselves, to say what they believe, to say who they are, to see what kind of men and women they intend to be, and to make that declaration so that they may be held accountable to it. There are many ways that people can do that in our world. The way we do it as Christians is through baptism, and then in the renewal, which is confirmation. In the gospel story, we have a reset for the disciples, especially for Peter, a new creation and a new beginning. Those who followed will now be sent out, and the end of that journey will be their own crosses. Today, it is a reset for the confirmands. It is an opportunity and a chance to recommit and to go forward now in their lives with a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ and with us, with promises to which they must be held account, promises which they will keep, which will help to bring about a new and better world, at least in that small part of it, over which they have some influence, and to be good Christians in this world. That's all Jesus wanted from the disciples. It's all that we can ask of one another. And today, here in this place, it is what we lay across the shoulders of the little one being baptized, and those who are being confirmed, and those who are renewing their baptismal vows, and the whole community gathered, which will renew its baptismal covenant together. It's a big thing. It's heroic, and it's enough for the day. Amen.